Okay, good. I you know, the stuff I've said so far that might have been there too. But anyway, this is something very important, you guys, that I want to tell you, called incremental learning. You have seen the flyer, the PAL group flyer that's on the website?
Yes.
Have any of you looked at that?
Yes.
Okay, and then you can see that there's Joyce. When you go to About Us,
yes.
Joyce,
yes,
is on the flyer, and her son, who, by the way, he'll have 5 years clean and sober in March from heroin. From heroin and living on the streets for years.
Oh.
And so Joyce was one of the first PAL group moms. Mm. And I tell her story in this way because it demonstrates the incremental learning over a period of months. And it's approximately 9 month period of time. And here's what happened. When she first came to the meetings and told her story, her son was living on the streets using heroin, and he had a buddy, and they would sometimes go do some piecemeal work to get money to buy heroin, and who God knows whatever they did. But every day she brought him food. So after about coming to the meetings for about a month, she announced to the group, "Hey, I called Eric," because he did have a cell phone. "I called Eric and told him I can't bring him food anymore." Well, we all applauded for him. See, we applaud when people take action. So this is the key point. Baby steps, action steps. That's what is the whole core of hope, is baby steps, action steps. So now here's the point. After she stopped bringing him food, she had to wait about another month to find out if he died. Mm-hmm. See, this is the emotional part. So after about another month, she was ready to take another step, and she announced to us, now we didn't tell her to do this. She would discuss the things she was doing, and we would listen, and someone might say, "Do you think that's a good idea?" You know, that type of thing. So it was out in the open what she was doing. So then she told us, after about another month or so, "I called my son and told, I called Eric and I said, I'm sorry, but you can't come home anytime and take a shower like you've been doing." He would just knock on the door and come in and take a shower. And so she said, "I can't do that with you anymore." And he said, "Whatever," and hung up. Now she had to wait another 6 weeks to see if he died. He didn't. So she was ready for the next thing. The next thing she did is she called and said, "You know those 7 boxes of your stuff that we've had in the garage for the last 10 years? "Yep," he said. She said, "Well, I really need to clean out the garage, so I'm going to give you 30 days to come and get it, and I will actually help you move it. We'll get a truck or whatever, but if it's not gone in 30 days, I'm going to put it out for Salvation Army." And he said, "Whatever." Now she had to wait another 2 months to see if he died, and he didn't. So now this was the hardest one of all. She called him and said, "Eric, I can't loan you money anymore. I can't give you any more money for any reason." And now this was expletive and then hanged up. Now she had to wait another couple months. And so can you see the incrementalness of the baby steps of this? It isn't all or nothing, and it isn't nothing, because if nothing changes, nothing changes. So she's a good example of baby steps through time for her level of discomfort, of worry. Is this going to kill my son? Will he die without my help? You know. So after about 2 more months went by, and she got a call from him. He was in jail. The police picked him up. And this time he was in jail for like 3 weeks. Before, he was only overnight and didn't even faze him. Being in jail for 3 weeks did affect him a little bit more. But the other thing that happened is his buddy from the street died of an overdose, and he found out about it. So I think it was a combination of the 3 weeks in jail plus his buddy overdosing that he told his probation officer, "I'm ready now for treatment." Now, keep in mind, he had been in treatment twice before. So now he tells his probation officer, "I am serious. I'm ready for treatment." Well, we have county insurance here, and they run a couple of treatment centers. So Joyce gets his phone call. It's Eric on the phone. "Mom, I'm sitting in my probation officer's office, and I've been released from jail, And now I'm serious. I want help. I'm gonna go to Maverick House Treatment Center. I'm on their waiting list, but they don't have a bed. It might be 1 to 2 weeks before I can get in. Can I come home and stay there until I can get into to the Maverick House? And she said no. And he hung up on her. You see, without the incremental learning of those other steps, she might not have been able to say no.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
I don't know if I still could have said no.
Yes. Now, here's the thing about it is, I'm not saying that if she had said yes, he might have stayed clean and sober for 2 weeks before he got in. Who knows? But because of his history, it would be strongly advised not to do that.
Yeah.
By a professional.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, the probation officer put him in a halfway house for 2 weeks. He went into Maverick House and wound up staying there for 2 months, got out, went into a halfway house for 9 months. From the halfway house, he went to sober living, which is a lot less structure than a halfway house. It's just sober roommates for a year. And he just got married this past year.
Oh.
And he is working in the field helping addicts and their families.
Ooh.
I think he's about 33 or 34 years old right now, somewhere in that area. But I use Joyce's story for you guys to see the incremental action steps.
Yes.
No new actions, no change.
Right.
Now, what action should I take, Mike? Hey, I don't know for sure. You know, we can talk about it, but I'll tell you, if you listen to the people in the group and you educate yourself and you have a counselor, now you have many counsel. As the Bible says, a wise man has many counsel. The wise man still has to make the decisions, but the input from other people is helpful. You see how this works?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm going to ask the group there, who among you has taken an action step that you could share with us?
I kind of have.
Okay.
My husband was drinking pretty heavily and had some infidelity, and so I told him I couldn't live with him anymore.
Uh-huh.
So he moved out.
This is Rhonda?
Yes.
Yes, Rhonda.
But he has been to some AA meetings and church, but now he's kind of this last week decided, well, he just doesn't know if he can ever quit, and he's depressed and suicidal, and so now I don't know if the action should be cutting myself off from him completely and just telling him when he decides to get help to call me, or, you know, so I've kind of taken the one action, but now I don't know how to follow that up.
That's a good example of what I said. The fear that we have about taking new action is because if I do the old way, at least he lived through it. So we generally want to go back to the old comfortable way, that even though it's uncomfortable, it's known.
Mm-hmm.
And we would rather deal with the devil of the known than the devil of the unknown. But here's the reality we have to deal with, Rhonda. The hope for your loved one, this is for everybody, the hope for your loved one lies in the unknown. It will be in the unknown. And you see how that forces us to have faith in God?
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of this journey. It's a spiritual journey for them. It's a spiritual journey for us, too, because we have to go into the unknown to help them, because suppose it's the known. Isn't that where you have been living?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
See, we just hope it'll somehow magically change, but it won't.
Right.
So Rhonda, my first thought is that we can ask the group, does anyone have a suggestion? And this is what we do in the group. Does anyone have a suggestion for Rhonda? You heard what she said.
My suggestion, Cindy, would be to look in your own heart and figure out the best answer that's going to help you.
Mm-hmm.
It might hurt you, but it's going to be the best to help you.
Good point. Thank you. Now, the other thing we can do is, Rhonda, are you seeing a counselor?
No.
You should be seeing a counselor. That's going to be the most important thing for you right now, is to see a counselor, a female counselor who knows about codependency and addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And if you say, I can't afford it, I do understand that. Here in Phoenix area, we have churches who have counseling ministries,
mm-hmm,
that have a sliding scale all the way down to zero.
Right.
You know, and so there are resources out there. We have some city resources. if you're just a resident of the city, under certain circumstances, you can get a counselor at a really low price. But if you seek it, you know, if you seek it, you will find it. Knock and the door will be open. Seek, and you will find. There's a saying in the Bible from John. I don't know where it's at, but this is what I'm told. I'm not a good Bible person. I don't know all the stuff, but I pick certain things I like from there. And this is, ye have not because ye have asked not. So how many times are we trying to do it ourselves instead of asking for help? And isn't that what our loved ones are doing too?
Yeah. Okay.
See, we're their role model. We are their role model for hope. So one of the things we can do is, instead of saying, you need to go to meetings, we go to meetings. Instead of, you need to see a counselor, we see a counselor. Instead of, you need to change, I start to change. Now, it's not the whole enchilada, but you see how important that is.
Yeah.
That's how important that is. So professional help at this point where you guys are, where it's really right in the thick of it, and it has been for a while, and you can feel desperate and you can feel hopeless at times, that is the ideal time for you to see a counselor, not a marriage counselor, not a counselor for your son or for your husband, a counselor for yourself. We're back to that healthy selfishness. Now, here's the thing. It's going to help you in the short term, and it's going to help your loved one more than you can imagine in the long term.
Mike?
Yep.
It's Jeanette, and what you just said is what finally got through to me, that the hope is in the unknown.
Yep, yep.
When I finally told myself that the answer in the mystery is the history, when I realized that I had done everything, but it still wasn't enough. So why did I think I could do better than God could?
Very good point. Excellent point. Yep. Yeah, we're not always aware of that, Jeanette. Thank you for that, because we're not always aware of that. Counseling helps us focus on ourselves and our human limitations that we have. And it's interesting, as we accept our limitations, we become more unlimited. You see the paradox of that? As we accept our human limitations, we actually become more unlimited. And that's sort of paradoxical, but it's true. So what happens, the group cannot substitute for a personal counselor. The personal counselor cannot substitute for the group. So when you have the group and the friends that you make in the group that you can share with individually as well as during the meetings, and you have the counselor, now you're really cooking with gas. And you can get that maximum help to move forward. And this is something that we call it's actually called the pronouncement. Well, we have the announcement and the pronouncement. The pronouncement is, at a certain point, we say to our loved one, let's say it's my son, we say to them, look, we've been through this a lot. You know I love you. And this is the point I want to make with you, and that is, I'm going to make changes in how I help you. I'm going to learn how to help you better, no matter what you do. Now, if you guys run that through your minds and do a mental rehearsal, how would that feel?
Peaceful.
There you go. So there's an announcement and a pronouncement. The announcement is more for the parents and the son, and that is, I realize I've been treating you like a child for way too long. You're not a child. You're a man. You're a woman. And I hope you will forgive me for treating you like a child for too long. And from now on, I'm going to treat you like the adult person that you are, like the man you are, like the woman you are. Now, it's going to take me a while to get rid of all my old habits and establish new ones, so please give me some grace. But you see, that's a marker in time. And so there's three different announcements that we make, and one is called the game is up, and that's when you first find out they have an addiction and you've been pretending and they pretend and stuff, and you go, hey, the game is up. I know you got the problem. You know that I know that you know. You know, so that's the game is up. So that's early on. Have all of you done that one where you can remember when you didn't know for sure and then you knew for sure?
Yeah.
So that's called the game is up. And then the announcement when you learn about delayed emotional growth, hey, I apologize, I didn't realize this, but now that I do, I'm going to stop treating you like a child. It's going to take me a while to do that. So that's the announcement. And then the pronouncement is, and you don't have to do these all at one time, but at different times, the pronouncement is what we said before. I'm going to get help for me and learn how to help you better no matter what you do. So you can see that those are key things that you guys can do along the way that lets them know the changes you're making. When they see you make changes, it helps them. So, Nancy, let's go back to Nancy E. for a second. Your son with the, who has the alcohol problem. Mm-hmm. We had talked about how, you know, that he may or may not be an alcoholic in his own mind. But I'm jumping around here, but I wanted to finish the five categories too. So if we look at the five categories, then the first three are not addicted, you know, but the third one, the abuser, the person who uses too much, but still controls how they react, and they can control, so they can cut down if they need to and get up and go to work. So you see the difference there. That, and the abuser quite often looks like they're an addict or an alcoholic, and but let's say that they are 100% certain and they're willing to bet their life on. That's helpful because with that kind of certainty, we can move forward towards treatment. Then if they say, yeah, I'm an alcoholic, I'm an addict, then we can say as we become educated, there's only thing that's going to save you then is some form of treatment and recovery. So if you haven't had treatment and you're not in recovery, then it's just a matter of time. You will go back to using and you will throw away your life. And I don't want to help you do that anymore, or I don't want to be around it anymore. So the path is clearer when they're 100% certain. The path is clearer there as far as what's going to work. Now, if they're just an abuser, consequences will work. So, in other words, consequences will work to get them to cut down or quit, but it won't get them to be the way we want them to be necessarily. But if they are able to, here's a good example. Do you know people who've had one DUI and that's all the one they've ever had? You guys know anybody like that?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, now you know people who've had multiple DUIs?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a good example there that the multiple DUI is probably the addict or alcoholic, whereas the single DUI is he's an abuser, used too much, but he was able to cut down and control it because he can. So we're back to that simple definition of addiction, inability to control usage once I put it in my brain.
Okay.
So the only thing that's going to help them is total abstinence.
Right.
And the only way they can get to that is through treatment and recovery.
Okay.
Whereas the abuser, he can do total abstinence if he needs to, because he can. And if you put enough pressures on him, of consequences, he will, because he can. Does that make sense, you guys?
Yes.
So the only confusion factor is where they think they are, where we think they are, and where they really are. And so it may take time to figure that out.
Okay.
But it's going to be helpful for you if they say, no, I don't think I'm an alcoholic, or I'm not sure I'm a... It's going to be helpful for you not to call them one anyway.
Okay.
And to accept that and say, okay, let's find out then. Let's go get an evaluation like we would if it was a physical thing. Like if it was a broken arm suspected, let's go to see a doctor. If it's suspected alcoholism or drug abuse, let's go see a professional and get an evaluation. Why wouldn't you get an evaluation if it costs nothing? So see, you guys can do your homework, call around to treatment centers and say, I have a son or I have a husband who's got a problem. Can we come in and get an evaluation to get your opinion of whether he's just an abuser or a substance abuser or an alcoholic or addicted? Or do you charge for that? Or could we just come in and do a tour? You know, that's what we do at Calvary.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of their marketing, is to do an evaluation for you.
I have a quick question. If you think they're dangerous to themselves, like suicidal or you know, if they have children, like teenage children that live with them sometimes, is there a path to something to do so that you don't feel like if something does happen, you know, it's your fault after the fact?
Well, you know, I can tell you from my own personal experience that it was a suicide attempt in my life that woke me up and got me to get help finally. And I was 36 years old. And the suicide attempt came about because my wife left me, and I didn't realize that I had delayed emotional growth issues. I didn't know any of this stuff. I didn't have a word for that. But what I was I was an alcohol abuser, tremendous alcohol abuser. Didn't stop me from being successful in business. Had two kids, and I was cheating on my wife. I was gambling, so I didn't realize I was a sex abuser. A sex addict, and we didn't have those words back then, and a gambling addict. So I didn't. Hey, I was a successful businessman, and I could prove it by my house and my car and my bank account and all of that.
Yeah.
I was 36 years old, so when she said, I'm going to divorce you, I said, go ahead, I'll have even more fun without you. I said that in my emotionally ignorant state that I was.
Yeah, right.
So when she was finally gone, because we had a couple times of getting back and forth, but when she was finally gone and I knew she wasn't coming back because she was with another guy at that point, we were divorced, all of a sudden, I had this emotional pain that I couldn't deal with. I had no idea what it was. I knew it wasn't physical, but I mean, I felt it physically, but I knew it wasn't like a broken arm or something.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it was a broken heart, but it was so intense. You guys ever had emotional pain so intense you can't live with it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what I had. And I had no way to deal with that. I had no means of understanding. So what happened was I just went into the garage, turned on my expensive car, closed the garage door, laid a blanket down and laid down for a while, and I was just ready to do it. Mm-hmm. I must have laid there for about 5 minutes. I didn't have any big ahas or awarenesses, but I did have this sense of fear. I scared myself that I was willing to do this. And so I stood up and turned off the car and went in and called my sister on the phone. Excuse me. I'm going to sneeze here. And
bless you ahead of time.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You are blessed.
Yeah. It's one of those sneezes that won't come out. But I called my sister, who had been through a divorce 2 years earlier, and she had two sons, and she's a couple years younger than me. And I said, Mary, do you know the name of a good counselor I could go see? Here I was asking for help for the first time in my life. As an adult at 36 years old. And she said, is this my brother Mike calling? Sarcastically, because people had been telling me for years to get help. And I was telling them, you got a problem, you get help. Shut up. You know, F off. And so here I was asking for help sincerely. So that was my bottom. And then I learned a lot of things in recovery, in going to see counseling. So my help came through counseling. My brother's help came through the 12-step program. My younger sister, who I had called that day, her help came through the church. And my youngest sister, because there's four of us, who's 10 years younger than me, she hasn't got help yet. But the point I'm trying to make is I had no idea then that 10 years later I would be in this field.
Yeah, right.
But that was my bottom. So I do understand suicide from the standpoint of I can't live with all this emotional pain. It wasn't that I wanted to die. It was that I couldn't stand, I wanted to end the pain.
Right. That's
and that was the
is.
Only thing that came to mind. Now, what I found in counseling was that my wife was a bigger part of my life than I knew, because I didn't have any friends. She was my friend. I didn't have any recreation in my life. She was my recreation. I didn't have any spirituality or church. I would go to church with her once in a while. So she was my church and my spirituality. I didn't have any support. She was my support. She was my family. Well, what does that leave left for me? Work and addiction. That's what I had. So when she left, more of me left than stayed. You see my point here?
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, I had no understanding of that. I just had an emotional pain of that. So I learned then it was important for me to create a life for myself and then add a spouse to it. instead of making my spouse my life and then denying that she was my life.
Mm-hmm.
So men are in a lot of denial. Women are too, but men tend to have more denial because they're not in touch with their emotions. And our emotions are our deeper truth. So that was my story. So now what I'm saying is, for many people I've met over the years, it was a suicide attempt that got their attention. Remember I said, people don't change when they see the light. They change when they feel the heat.
Mm-hmm.
That was my heat. And that's the challenge we have. We don't know what a person's bottom is, and a person doesn't have to actually hit the bottom. Some people can get so close to it and see it and then ask for help. So all we can do is try to help them help themselves. Instead of helping them, mm-hmm. we're helping them help themselves.
Yeah.
You see the difference there.
Mm-hmm.
So, Rhonda, if you go see a counselor, that can help you with that decision.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no clear-cut thing, but you treating him like an adult instead of a child, and you getting help for yourself and putting yourself first, that's the general thing.
Mm-hmm.
Does that help?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Michael,
see, the problem is, Nancy Long and Rhonda, both you guys have a spouse with a problem. Whether you like it or not, you have been forced into being the leader of the family. The man is supposed to be the leader of the family, but when they're impaired like this, you are the default leader of the family. You didn't ask for it, and you may even resist it and say, I don't want it, I didn't ask for it, I didn't sign up for this. You can do that. But the reality is, if you go ahead and accept it and wield it and use it, that will be the best. Like Nancy, you're already doing that.
Right.
And Rhonda, you can see you're doing it too. So you're better off, in my opinion, to accept the power that's been forced on you and then use it, like my wife did. And that doesn't mean you have to divorce him. She did in my case. I'm not saying you have to divorce, but I am saying you have to use the power you have over them. For instance, the threat of divorce, the threat of separation, or actually separating. Because otherwise, like me, they won't believe it. Oh, you said it before. You always come back.
Yeah.
Sound familiar?
Yeah.
Yep. So it's really a battle for reality. And this is where the delayed emotional growth comes in. And Rhonda, I mentioned this to Nancy Long, but Rhonda, for you, do you feel like you've been the parent and he's been the child in this area?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so what I'm just saying, then you can relate to that. So what happens then is that you can wield that power because you have that influence over him, and you can say, look, if you admit that you're an alcoholic, then if you don't get treatment and recovery, which I am learning is the only way that it can work, is total abstinence, and that can only come from you doing the work of recovery. If you don't do that, then I can't be with you. I will still always love you, but I can't be with you because it's not good for you or me to be with you. And then if he says, but I'm not an alcoholic, then say, okay, then would you be willing to go see a professional and get a professional opinion?
Mm-hmm.
See, either way, you're moving. You see how you're moving forward there?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's the general. Okay. And keep in mind, you guys, when I give general suggestions and thoughts and ideas, it's always, you know, a generalization. There's always exceptions to general rules and general suggestions. And the other thing is, whether you do it or not, I'll be just as supportive of you. Because it is the unknown, and if I said this is what will work, I'm pretending I know the unknown. No one knows the unknown.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyone who says they do is lying or making a mistake. I don't say everyone's a liar, but... They're making a mistake there.
Mike, it's Nancy E., and I have a question.
Yes.
We're talking about my son, and you had said that, that he needs to pick a man in his life to be his role model. Well, I've remarried to this wonderful man who really cares for my adult children, and my son and he are very good friends. Would that be a choice for my son?
Nope. In the same way that if your son had cancer, that the stepdad cannot help him with the cancer. The stepdad can help him with a lot of things, mm-hmm. but he can't help him with the cancer.
So what would be, where would he have to go? Is this when a counselor comes into the picture?
Yeah, see, again, it was a counselor for me, and it was actually several counselors for me because it was a lot of years for me for my help. But it will be a counselor. It will be a sponsor. Look at AA for a second. AA and NA, the 12-step programs, they offer sponsorship. Let me ask you a question. How effective would AA be without sponsorship?
It doesn't,
yeah.
No.
Not at all. It would be worthless. It would be worthless. It's the relationship of one man with another, one woman with another. That is the whole key. And that's what is the same thing here. Now, I'm not saying they have to go to the 12-step program, but they
mm-hmm.
cannot do it alone.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to, they have to be, now, I have a lot of these young guys, they go, oh, I don't think I'm an addict. I just use because I like it. Okay, and so I talk to the parents, and the parents say, well, I want him to get some help for this. So I ask the son. Son is 18, or the son is 28, somewhere in between. I'll say to the son, are you willing to see, what are you willing to do about your drug problems? Well, I don't know. I don't really need, I'll do it myself. And I go, hey, there's no way you can do it yourself, but would you go to outpatient? Would you go to an evaluation? Would you see a counselor? I'll see a counselor, he says. I said, okay, good. And then I refer them to a counselor who will then try to help them see the truth that they need to go to get help. You follow me? Baby steps.
Okay.
So we start with what they're willing to do. So you see how we're sort of going on their side here in a way? So now the recommendation is, I'm listening to you and your opinion of yourself. Okay, I'm gonna go with that. That's different. And then I'm going to let you select the menu of where you want to start. That's different, too. You guys see how different this is?
Yeah.
It's treating them like an adult.
Mm-hmm.
Because as a child, when you treat them like a child, you go, hey, this is what you got to do. You ain't doing it. Why aren't you doing it? You know you need to do this. Why aren't you doing this? You have to do this. That's how you treat a child.
Mm-hmm.
With an adult, you say, what are your choices? Which choice do you want to make? How do you see it? And you listen to them, and you validate what they're saying. I don't expect you guys to do that because it's hard to do that, especially when they're talking off the wall like they do.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Jamie told me, he said, Mom, don't hate the players in the game, hate the game.
Okay, and again, here's the thing. If I'm talking to him, I know the game better than he knows the game. And then I would answer that question. I have the answer to that. You don't have that.
Okay.
So, you know, and so if I had that conversation with him, then he would, pretty soon he would shut up because,
right.
Because the addiction and the delayed emotional growth, remember I said there's a curriculum to this.
Yes.
It's a limited subset of known variables. There's the words for you. A limited subset of known variables. The game of chess is a limited subset of known variables.
So, Mike, this is Patty.
Yes.
So then any male family member, uncle, brother-in-laws, or anything else wouldn't be a good person for that person to...
Yeah, don't get me wrong. They can be a good support person for them in general.
Now, if that uncle is 20-year recovered alcoholic, could that person help them? Nope.
In the same way, the uncle wouldn't do an operation on him if he was the doctor. He'd get someone else. The family is too close. The family is the best at bringing up issues and pain, but they are the worst at helping resolve it.
Okay.
But I mean, I was raised that way too. Keep everything in the family.
I was thinking.
Well, you don't. You just think that there's a better relationship.
If there's somebody that has gone through this, maybe could give more things.
Yeah, see,
that would still be a family member, such as father, uncle, grandfather, and stuff like that. I understand that.
They can share their own stories, but keep in mind, every time a family member shares something with me, when I'm defensive because I'm feeling attacked.
True.
I keep wondering, why are you sharing? What are you trying to get me to do? That's not really helpful.
Okay.
See, it's more helpful for them to say, maybe take him, give him a ride to the meeting, or
right.
You know, now if they could always say to this again, how I would with an adult, hey, I got a story I'd like to tell you about my own recovery. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah.
Sure. Okay, then I tell it. I got another story. You want to hear it? No. Okay, then I won't tell it. So we impose ourselves on people in the name of help without asking them.
Okay.
Okay.
So with your son, he is too fine-tuned with you, Nancy. You know way too many details about your son's life. And so what happens is he will put you in the position of, hey, be my landlord. Hey, be my employer. Be my lender. Be my counselor. Be my all of these things. And all of those things will wind up backfiring on him and on you.
Okay.
And see, this is what's so hard for parents, and this is what's very hard for moms. You're going to help him more by doing less.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So when he says, well, what should I do about this situation, X? I don't know. What do you think? Well, I'm asking you. You're my mom. You're supposed to love me. Give me an opinion here. How can I do that? I have no idea. Ask your dad. Well, I don't want to ask him. I'm asking you. Well, I just told you. I don't know. See, this is the best thing you guys can learn to say. I don't know. Ask a professional. See how hard that is for a mom?
Yeah.
It really is, and it's just funny that once you put it out there, it makes it, everyone's like, why? Why didn't I think of that? Why do we? Because we try to fix it is why.
Exactly. They manipulate you from the fix-it position. As soon as you get out of the fix-it position, they will try to force you back into it because they can't manipulate you the same way.
Mike, this is Patty again, and
yeah.
My grandson lives with my son, and he's watched his father drink a lot. There's been things going on at the house with him there.
Uh-huh.
He allows his son to do a lot of things, have girlfriends over, and you can take it from there.
Mm-hmm.
What can I do as a grandmother of this child? He's not, how do I want to say this? He's not getting the best of guidance from his father.
That's for sure.
What can I do as a grandmother?
Well, let me ask you a question. How old is your grandson?
16.
Okay. Then let me give you a phone number.
Okay.
This is Sue. Remember, I talked about networking. She's a grandmother who's been through this.
Okay.
And so she can be helpful just to talk about her experiences. And her phone number is 602.
Okay.
348.
Okay.
4663.
Okay.
And I've given her number over the years to quite a few people. She's one of our volunteer facilitators, and she's more than happy to talk to grandmas.
Okay.
About her experiences, and right now her in her case it was a daughter that had the problem, and her daughter is in recovery and doing well.
Great,
but she went through years of stuff, both legal and emotional and family. And so she could be very helpful to just her experience to share with you.
Well, he has said to me that don't take Logan away. He's the only thing I've got now. And I might as well be dead. If you take him away, I might as well be dead. And I don't want that to happen, but yet I don't think Logan needs to be subject to all that going on over there.
Yeah. Well, you're in a one down position that a lot of grandparents are because it's not your child.
Right.
But here's the question: does your son say that he's an alcoholic?
I think he pacifies us by saying, "Yeah, I'm an alcoholic," or "I have a problem drinking."
Okay.
But I don't know if he truly believes that he is. When you said to ask him on a scale from 1 to 100.
Yeah.
I think he might be that 97%.
Well, then you have a couple things you can do. One thing is you can ask him, hey, son, I know you don't want me to take Logan away. Well, one of the ways you can reduce the chances of that is to be willing to go with me to a treatment center for an evaluation with no strings attached. It's just an opinion. It costs nothing. You will hear their opinion, what they say, and, you know, it's up to you whether you do any actions or not. You see how that's a baby step?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's a step forward. Now, there's no obligation and no cost, son, so why would you not do that unless you didn't want to know the truth? And do you want to raise a son with a dad who doesn't want to know the truth?
Right.
See, so you have some ammunition there. The other thing, Patty, is to go see a counselor to help you with this as well.
I will. Okay.
And by the way, if you guys can find some good counselors, because they're you know, it's like anything else, a good accountant, a good doctor, find one who's, you know, probably a little bit older, you know, whatever that is. That's a very, to me, a little bit older is 80.
Yeah.
So, but someone who's been around for a while and who talks directly, speaks direct, and who knows about addiction and recovery. So I know people around this area here, see, but I don't know your area. But you guys can find that out.
Oh, yeah.
And you might even call a treatment center and say, do you know someone who's really good,
yeah,
who tells it like it is and knows about, those are the two key words, codependency and addiction. You might even find one, like I have here, one of the ones I refer quite a few of the moms to, is she's got a son that she's been through this with. And she went to the PAL group. She no longer goes, but she went through, and she's on the other side of that.
Okay.
And there you have someone who can really relate because they're a professional, they've been around, and then they've had a son. So you might find that.
Thank you.
So this is where our hope is, because there's a curriculum. Meaning it's a subset of known variables. That means then that they don't have a problem outside of that list. And it also means they don't have a problem that recovery doesn't have a solution to.
Right.
Now, in contrast, if we look at life, life is not a limited subset of known variables. It's a limited subset of unknown variables. You see how different that is?
Mm-hmm.
So when they're living in their addiction, they're living in a subset. They're not living in life. And they're trying to control everything, so they will get bored. And it will appear to us that they're living like they're not moving forward in their life. They're like in a rut. You guys relate to that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, if the rut, let's say it's a 100-yard rut, you guys can picture like a football field, that means they can run forward and run back, run forward and run back within that 100-yard rut. Can you picture that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's how they've been living, and you've been doing it with them.
It's miserable.
It's right. So we want a ladder for them to climb out. Now, you don't have the ladder. You can't make them. Someone above them, remember, picture a rut. It's like 10 feet below the ground, 100 yards forward and back. And so that's what the rut looks like. Now, you're in there with them. You have a ladder at your end that you can climb out. And you want them to climb out, but they can't climb on your ladder, and you can't give them a ladder. They have to yell and scream from their rut. Someone come help me. A person will come, drop the ladder down, and help them come up. And if you get out of the rut and get on the solid ground behind them, it encourages them to yell for help for somebody above them to drop a ladder down. You see what I'm getting at here?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You see the visual there? So it's not helpful for you to stay in the rut with them, and that's what you've been doing all these years. That's why it gets frustrating.
Well, in a way, it kind of, in my journey of getting educated, it's Cindy. Mm-hmm. I'm also feeling the fear and the overwhelming sensation of failing has left because mm-hmm. you start to realize that they're down in the rut and they're running back and forth and there really isn't anything except my taking care of me.
Yep.
That's going to change him wanting to get out of that rut. And he told me last week, I got home from our meeting, and he goes, I don't think you should go to those meetings anymore. And I go, why? And he goes, what are you telling those people about me?
Sure.
I go, well, I'm not telling them anything about you. This is about me.
Uh-huh. Good for you. Yeah, Cindy, I have the picture. If you can imagine, there is the back end of sort of the, there's the back end of the rut and then the front end of the rut. And there's 100 yards in between. And so at the back end, that's the ladder you're climbing up out of. And then you're the cheerleader now. He's down there and you're yelling, you can do it. You can do it. I believe in you. I believe in you. You'll ask for help sometime. You see how different that is. You're the cheerleader up there versus the coach on the ground with him.
Well, I'm climbing. Slowly but surely, I think I'm climbing.
Yeah, there you go. So it's going to take some time. Good point. It's going to take some time. Now, the more you do that, the more you climb out of that rut and get on the solid ground, you're not leaving him. You're not abandoning him. The more that you do that, although he may accuse you of that, the more you do that, you have demonstrated to him how to do it for himself. So the time will come when he gets so tired of living. So someone once said, sick and tired of being sick and tired. Of living that way.
Yeah. I can't even imagine their life.
Yep.
I wouldn't want to be, obviously, nobody would want to be them.
Hey, you guys, I just noticed the time, and it got away from me. I have to leave. We scheduled an hour and a half, and it's been an hour and 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And Mike, boy, that went fast for me. They did it for you guys.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And, Mike, I'm sorry. I know you said we're the timekeepers, but when you're on, I don't want to stop. I don't think any of us want you to stop.
That's why I think those CDs would be so important.
Yeah, that was a great idea. I'm going to take that away from it. And if you guys have the time to do this, send me email to me, each one of you, if you will do this. This will be very helpful to me, and I would appreciate it tremendously. This is what I'm taking away from the meeting that was helpful for me. And I've got to go here. Actually, what I'm going to do is go facilitate a meeting that I'm going to be a little bit late for here. But I'm going to press the star 9 button, which, again, will stop the thing. Hold on.